This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Brian Naylor in Washington, in for Neil Conan. Hearings are going on at this hour by the Federal Commission investigating the September 11th terrorist attacks. It's the second day of testimony from high-ranking officials in both the Clinton and Bush administrations. Yesterday, the panel looked at the diplomatic and military aspects of the U.S.'s national counterterrorism policy leading up to September 11th and heard from the current and former Secretaries of State and Defense. Today, the focus is on intelligence policy and national policy coordination. So far, the 10-member bipartisan commission has heard from CIA Director George Tenet and President Clinton's National Security Advisor Sandy Berger. The most anticipated witness is Richard Clark, the counterterrorism chief in both the Clinton and Bush administrations. Clark set off a political firestorm in Washington this week with charges that the Bush White House didn't take terrorist threats from al-Qaeda seriously and focused instead on Iraq. Richard Clark is testifying this hour, and we hope to bring you some of his testimony. And later in this hour, life in Baghdad through the eyes and words of The New Yorker's John Lee Anderson. But first, the 9/11 Commission and what we've learned about the 9/11 attacks. If you have questions about the work of the Commission, give us a call at 800-989-TALK. That's 800-989-8255. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us here in Studio 3A is John Harwood, political editor of The Wall Street Journal. Welcome, John.
Great to be here.
And also with us is Steve Call. He's the managing editor of The Washington Post and the author of The Ghost Wars, The Secret History of the CIA, Afghanistan, and Bin Laden from the Soviet Union to September 10th, 2001. He joins us from the Post's offices here in Washington. Welcome to you, Steve.
Brian, glad to be here.
John, let me begin with you. The 9/11 Commission has issued preliminary findings of its work so far. There have been a number of hearings prior to the ones this week. What are the highlights from their reporting?
What we've seen so far, Brian, is not all that surprising. It shows that the government did try through diplomatic efforts to get the Taliban government in Afghanistan to expel bin Laden. And through various means to pursue bin Laden. Those were not successful. We saw that the CIA was very concerned about this problem, but they felt they had a lack of intelligence they could act upon. And you saw from top national security officials in both administrations, that is Bill Clinton and George Bush's, a feeling that there was not a mandate from the public and certainly not from Congress to do anything more dramatic like invading Afghanistan. So it's a lot of things that didn't get done and then explanations for why they didn't get done.
Steve Call, what was your overall impression from the testimony that you heard yesterday?
Well, similar to John's in the sense that I don't think there was a lot of new facts presented. There were some very interesting new details about episodes we understood in broad brush. But what there was a much fuller articulation by the people involved of what was in their minds as they dealt with this suite of problems and as they debated various policy alternatives. And so I think for the first time in the case of both the principals in the Clinton and Bush administration, we heard a much fuller and in some ways more nuanced explanation of why we had the policies we had before September 11th.
Mm-hmm. It struck me, and both of you can talk about this, that we heard there was a lot of unanimity among these administrations that to some extent have been pointing the fingers at each other in the past. Yesterday, everybody seemed to be kind of in agreement on what was out there, what they knew and what they didn't know and what they could do about it.
Well, the one thing they both had in common, Brian, is that officials in Bill Clinton's administration for 8 years and George Bush's for some 8 months served in office and failed to catch this guy before al-Qaeda could strike as they did on September 11th. And so in that sense, they were all in the same boat. And you can make excuses for what happened. And certainly this afternoon, Richard Clark is going to give a lot more powerful line of criticism about why things should have happened. been done that weren't done, but they're all in the same boat in that respect.
Yeah, specifically, they pursued the same foreign policies. I mean, they were neither the Clinton administration nor the Bush administration was prepared to, for instance, choose sides in the Afghan civil war or confront the Taliban more directly. And so you saw both secretaries of state and both secretaries of defense essentially explaining each other's policies across partisan lines. And in contrast to the incendiary partisan debate that Richard Clark has set off this week, they were really speaking in a chorus yesterday.
Let's hear some of the testimony from yesterday. First, from National Security Advisor Sandy Berger, the National Security Advisor during the Clinton administration. In this clip we're going to play, he's responding to a question about how much authority CIA Director George Tenet was given to capture or kill Osama bin Laden before September 11th.
There could not have been any doubt about what President Clinton's intent was after he fired 60 Tomahawk cruise missiles at bin Laden in August 98. I assure you they were not delivering an arrest warrant. The intent was to kill bin Laden. That's number one. His overall intent was manifest in August 98. Number two, I believe the director understood, and I think he reiterated today, that we wanted him to use the full measure of the CIA's capabilities. Only the CIA can judge what its capabilities are. And that then defines the scope of the authorization. We gave the CIA every inch of authorization that it asked for. If there was any confusion down the ranks, it was never communicated to me nor to the president. And if any additional authority had been requested, I am convinced it would have been given immediately.
That was former National Security Advisor Sandy Berger testifying this morning before the 9/11 Commission. Steve Call, Sandy Berger is saying there that there is no doubt in President Clinton's mind that Osama bin Laden needed to be dealt with as far back as 1998. In your book, Ghost Wars, you talk about how the CIA was approaching bin Laden. What did you find?
Well, the specific issue that's highlighted by Sandy Berger's testimony there is the legal authorities, classified legal authorities, that President Clinton gave in a series of highly classified memoranda to the CIA that governed their hunt for bin Laden in the several years before 2001, and specifically whether or not the CIA operatives in the field and their paid agents, Afghan militias and others, were authorized to simply kill bin Laden if they found him, or whether they had to run operations designed to capture him and bring him to the United States for trial. This is a really complicated issue. It's hidden because many of the documents that would clarify it remain classified and were only discussed obliquely today. But essentially, some new arguments were put forth both by Berger and Tenet in their testimony today, and they amount to this. Tenet said, in effect, look, we knew that the authorities we had were somewhat limited, but we didn't ask for more because we didn't think we were in a position to actually kill him. And he provided a justification that supported Berger and Clinton on the whole. The issue that the commission is looking at is the fact that the CIA officers in the field and their agents were in fact confused about what their authorities really were, when they could use lethal force, when they had to engage in an arrest operation. And I think that subject is going to be investigated in more detail in the weeks ahead.
John Harwood, what's your take?
Well, Steve knows a lot more about this than I do, but I think it's a pretty clear management failure if Sandy Berger believes that the authority had been given in a crystal clear manner and the people in the field didn't believe that.
We're taking calls here at Talk of the Nation. Our number is 1-800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. And our first caller is Chantel from Anchorage, Alaska. Chantel, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. I have a question just watching the commission on TV, and I'm wondering, there seems to be a lot of sort of finger-pointing. The Clinton administration didn't catch it in time. We didn't know anything about it. And I'm wondering how the families feel about getting to the bottom of it all, not necessarily pointing blame, because I think our whole system failed the country. And I don't think that's what this commission should be about. It should be about protecting us and preventing this in the future, just to have an understanding of what happened in the past. And my question, I guess, would be, has anybody heard from the families and how they're watching this, they're just sort of saying, like, these people are just blaming. What about my loved one?
Mm-hmm. John, I'm wondering, what is this commission, first of all, tasked with? What is it supposed to be getting to the bottom of this? Is it supposed to be trying to prevent something like this from ever happening again?
Well, I think both. Find out what we did and then what we could do in the future. We have heard from various family members on different sides of the political fence, some of them being critical of the Bush administration for not making Condi Rice available to testify publicly, and also criticizing members of both administrations for not having done more. Very interesting opening to Richard Clark's testimony along those lines this afternoon. Clark, in effect, turned and spoke directly to the people in the room and said he apologized for himself and on behalf of the U.S. government for the failures to do more about this problem. And that seems both an attempt to talk to them directly, also perhaps an effort to get a little bit of an upper hand in the credibility war with the Bush White House right now, because he's trying to come across as more forthcoming and direct than the Bush administration officials have been.
And we'll be hearing a little bit of Dick Clark's testimony a little later on in the program. Steve, I'm just wondering, what's your take on what's been going on, the dynamics sort of this hearing and the folks, the families that are involved in this?
Well, I think the families are chartered as a part of this investigation to a greater degree than certainly the congressional investigation that reported out last summer. In other words, the whole purpose of the commission is to redress their concerns and their place in this episode. And so they've, I think, been in touch with the commission investigators. They have formed, as John says, some groups that have a partisan cast, other groups that are much more neutral. And I think as a result of their place at the table, in future hearings, we're going to see a lot of concentration on what happened on September 11th itself, issues like emergency response, national preparedness, civil defense, and those are issues that weren't addressed in previous investigations.
All right. Chantel, thanks very much for calling.
Thank you.
All right. Let's hear another clip now from yesterday's hearing, this one from Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld. He was talking about whether the September 11th attacks could have been prevented if action had been taken sooner against bin Laden.
Even if bin Laden had been captured or killed in the weeks before September 11th, no one I know believes that it would necessarily have prevented September 11th. Killing bin Laden would not have removed al-Qaeda's sanctuary in Afghanistan. Moreover, the sleeper cells that flew the aircraft into the World Trade Towers and the Pentagon were already in the United States months before the attack. Indeed, if actionable intelligence had appeared, which it did not, 9/11 would likely still have happened. And ironically, much of the world would likely have called the September 11th attack and al-Qaeda retaliation for the U.S. provocation of capturing or killing bin Laden.
John Harwood, first of all, is it bin Laden or bin Laden?
I think it's bin Laden.
A new pronunciation yesterday from Secretary Rumsfeld. What do you think of that argument, though? Was he on the mark?
Well, I'm not quite sure what he was trying to say there. On the one hand, you could see that as an exculpatory statement for the administration's failure to have gotten bin Laden, because it wouldn't have stopped the attacks anyway, and then they would have had a propaganda advantage by saying this was retaliation. I assume that's not preventing them from pursuing bin Laden now. I think the import of the argument doesn't amount to all that much. They didn't do either. They didn't kill bin Laden, or they didn't disrupt al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. So, I don't know where he wants to take that.
We're talking about the commission looking into the events leading up to the terrorist attacks on September 11th, and we're taking your calls at 800-989-TALK, and you can send us email. The address is totn@npr.org. I'm Brian Naylor. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Brian Naylor in Washington. Hearings are continuing today on Capitol Hill by the September 11 panel investigating the circumstances surrounding the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Our guests are John Harwood, political editor of The Wall Street Journal, and Steve Call, managing editor of The Washington Post. You're invited to join the discussion. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Former top counterterrorism advisor Richard Clark is speaking right now in front of the Independent Commission looking into the 9/11 attacks. And here are his opening statements from earlier today.
I welcome these hearings because of the opportunity they provide to the American people to better understand why the tragedy of 9/11 happened and what we must do to prevent a reoccurrence. I also welcome the hearings because it is finally a forum where I can apologize to the loved ones of the victims of 9/11, to them who are here in the room, to those who are watching on television. Your government failed you. Those entrusted with protecting you failed you. And I failed you. We tried hard, but that doesn't matter because we failed. And for that failure, I would ask, once all the facts are out, for your understanding and for your forgiveness.
Steve Call, a pretty dramatic moment there from Richard Clark asking for forgiveness, not the sort of thing that you normally hear from an administration official taking responsibility for something like this.
Well, he's had a week of dramatic statements, and this culminates them. I think he means what he says based on his history with this issue. He has given most of the best years of his professional life to preventing terrorist attacks, and I take at face value his words. At the same time, he, more than any of the other witnesses this week, has been engaged in very sharp political arguments, and as you suggested at the top of the program, I think he's quite aware of the battle he's in with the Bush administration and is fighting tactically to position himself as best he can.
Yeah, I would like to talk a little bit about the politics a little later on, but John, just to follow on that point, it does seem as though he is sort of offering a little preemptive strike of his own there, or a response at least.
He is, because of course he's not saying that we all failed equally. He's making a very, very strong argument that the Bush administration, in effect, was locked in on the wrong priorities and didn't pay heed the way it should have. And we've seen from the ferocious counterattack from the Bush administration, they believe that goes right to the heart of the president's reelection strategy, and they need to try to knock that down very strongly. And so we've got a real battle going on that's going to play out not just at these hearings but beyond.
I want to ask Steve, in his testimony yesterday, Secretary of State Colin Powell said that President Bush and his entire national security team understood that terrorism had to be among their highest priorities, and that it was, which goes to the controversy brought up by Clark. Do you think, is that accurate, Powell's statement? Was terrorism among their highest priorities when they came into office in January 2001?
I don't think the record would support it as being in the top three or four issues that they focused on. At the same time, Powell and Tenet and Clark have all essentially observed the same set of facts about the Bush administration's approach to terrorism during the first 9 months of 2001. And Powell and Tenet have emphasized that the Bush administration was doing everything it could to get after the problem in a deliberate way, taking a broader view of policy changes that were required. And Clark, on the other hand, has said that the same set of facts amounts to dereliction. So their arguments are really not about facts. They're about the interpretation of whether the Bush administration's policy development approach the first 9 months was adequate or not.
Let's bring in a listener here. Jason is on the line from Willingboro, New Jersey. Jason, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Thanks for calling in to Talk of the Nation.
Well, thank you for having me. A statement and a question. I find it hard to believe that some of these accusations that President Bush didn't respond appropriately and, in effect, putting all these American lives at risk. I don't know, maybe that's just being naive. I have a hard time with that. The question I have, though, is more aimed towards Clark's accusations about Bush not essentially preventing 911 when the event actually happened only 9 months into his term. But it doesn't seem like there's enough attention being placed on all the stuff that happened during Clinton's 8 years with the World Trade Center bombing in 93, the embassy attacks in Africa, the USS Cole. We threw, 60 Tomahawks at them, blew up a couple tents, killed a few camels, but obviously it wasn't effective and it wasn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
Is this just going to be another way for Clinton just to kind of smile, you know, ask us, you know, what exactly do you mean by the word is, and... You know, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it sounds like you got your hands full at home.
Actually, I just picked my son up from school.
let me just direct to John for a minute. Do you think that is it clear from these hearings where the responsibility lies? Is this going to become a kind of a lead to more finger pointing in this election year over who should have done what when?
It's not clear to me where the responsibility lies. And one thing I think we have to remember when we're listening to Richard Clark criticize members of both administrations for not having done enough, and especially the Bush administration, is that he's speaking with the wind at his back, in effect, of the emotional charge of 9/11 that simply wasn't present during the 8 years of the Clinton administration and the first 8 months of the Bush administration. That changed the psychology of the country and the political realities of the country in ways that we shouldn't underestimate. Secondly, I think the caller raises precisely the advantage that George Bush brings to this debate right now, which is that he says it's really hard to believe that George Bush didn't do enough. One of the things that the aftermath of 9/11 produced in the American people was a belief that George Bush would act strongly and decisively in defense of American interests, and to make the argument that, as many Democrats do, that the Iraq War was a diversion, that it wasn't really focused on the problem, that's kind of a nuanced argument, because what he's doing is acting, and Democrats have got a heavy load to carry to try to convince a critical sort of swing segment of the American electorate that he's moving in the wrong direction.
Steve Cole, I'm just wondering what's your take on that?
Well, I think the thing that's curious to me about the argument that Clark is now making so forcefully is that if you look at the detailed record of what the Bush administration did and didn't do in the first 9 months of its administration before September 11th, they're certainly vulnerable to the charge that they moved slowly to develop a comprehensive policy to attack al-Qaeda. At the same time, while they were deliberating, they were essentially following the same policies that Clark had overseen in the Clinton administration. Those policies were more or less on automatic pilot. There were a few nuanced exceptions to that general assertion, but essentially it was the same policy. So the burden that Clark has to overcome as he presses his argument is why the Bush administration's pursuit of those policies constitutes neglect, whereas the Clinton administration's pursuit of it, as he said today in the beginning of his testimony, Berger gave him everything he ever asked for, but they were essentially the same policies. So I'm sure he'll be questioned about that as the hearing goes on today.
Jason, thanks very much for calling.
Thanks for having me.
All right. John, I just want to ask you, is this an issue that John Kerry is going to be able to take advantage of, or will try to take advantage of, in the upcoming campaign?
Well, he'd certainly like to, but it's a bit tricky for John Kerry because he, after all, voted to authorize the war against Iraq. Now, in terms of the actions pre 9/11, I think it's a dicey thing for John Kerry, in essence, to appear to be perhaps blaming the president for the 9/11 attacks. And in terms of what happened after 9/11, again, he voted for the Iraq War, and so at some critical junctures, he's been aligned with the president's policy. And it's a tricky one. It would have been easier for Howard Dean, who was a more full-throated mm-hmm. opponent of the Iraq War, to go at the president's policies in a thoroughgoing way.
Let's go to Paul, who is on the line with us now from San Diego. Paul, welcome to Talk of the Nation. I guess it works better if I push the button here. Paul?
Do you have me on the button?
I got you on the button. You're on the air with us now. Thanks very much for calling.
Thank you. My question or concern seems to be that Osama bin Laden seems to, you know, personify all he's the personification of terrorism, and it seems as though they're concentrating so much on the question of getting bin Laden or what they did or didn't do to get him that it kind of muddies any other concerns about what did or didn't happen about September 11th. I mean, how did these people get into the country? How were they able to, mm-hmm. to carry out this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe they're not looking at some of the minutiae of this. Am I making myself clear?
Yeah, I think so. I think that some of those issues have been raised in and probably will come out in the final report. Steve, I guess Paul is referring to issues of immigration, of airport security, those sorts of things. Those are going to be included in the final report?
They will, and I think they'll be addressed in hearings. There have been some already, and there will be more concentrating on those issues. I think there's another question that was contained in the caller's query and also in what Rumsfeld was saying yesterday about what if they had gotten bin Laden, would it have really made any difference? And that's a very interesting what if question that's now coming up again and again. And I think Rumsfeld was talking about what would have happened if they had managed to find bin Laden in the summer of 2001. And his point was at that stage, the plot was so far advanced and al-Qaeda was so metastasized and such a powerful organization that decapitation wouldn't have made much difference. I think what the commission is going to look at is if you go further back in time, 99, 98, then bin Laden and al-Qaeda is a different animal, and its attacking it in those years might have made more of a difference.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. John?
Well, the question is what happens if we get him now? To what extent will we grow more bin Ladens, or to mm-hmm. what extent are there cells around the world that are positioned to do damage to us regardless of whether he's around or not? I don't think anybody knows the answer to that.
Paul, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
All right. I'd like to go to an email now from a listener, James in Tulsa, who writes, why is Condoleezza Rice not testifying? I know the Bush administration doesn't want her to, but why, I think, shows all Americans an explanation. John, is there an easy explanation as to why the president's national security advisor is not among those that we're watching testify this week?
Well, I think they're relying on precedent that discourages sitting White House aides to the president from testifying before Congress. It's a separation of powers issue.
All right. We're listening. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. One of the things that struck me from yesterday was comments from Commission member Jamie Gorelick. She was a former deputy attorney general in the Clinton administration, and I guess the only member of the panel allowed to read the president's daily intelligence briefings, which are highly classified documents. And she said that there was information in those briefings that would, as she put it, set your hair on fire. She spoke of an extraordinary spike of intelligence warning of an al-Qaeda attack in those briefings and that it plateaued at a spike level for months. Steve Call, I'm wondering what you made of those sort of cryptic remarks.
Well, I think there's a good record available about what she's describing, which is essentially that in the late spring and early summer of 2001, the threat reporting about al-Qaeda attacks surged, and it also took on an ominous character. There were multiple intercepts and agent reports and interrogation reports suggesting that bin Laden had set into motion attacks that he and his people thought would produce spectacular results and mass casualties. But that's where the reporting ended in its specificity. There was no indication about where and when these attacks would occur. There was just a conviction that something big was about to happen. And to the extent that the intelligence community guessed about where these attacks might emerge, they tended to cite specific references to attacks abroad, not in the United States.
We'd like to go now to Blake, who is on the line with us in Kansas City, Missouri. Blake, what's your question?
I have more of a general comment. I think the gist I've gotten from your panelists' discussion throughout this whole thing is the assessment of blame and the word blame itself in regards to who did what and what what happened when and whatnot. And, you know, if John Kerry's voting record is going to apply to this and George Bush's whatever is going to apply to that. And what I think is, I think that's looking in the rearview mirror. I think we're looking at what caused, instead of looking at what caused the problem, we should look at what's going to solve the problem. And I just want your comments off the air. Thank you very
much. All right.
Much.
Thanks, Blake, for calling. John, I'm wondering what your thoughts are.
Well, you know, one of the things that happens in most governments around the world when disaster strikes is that somebody's held accountable, and we haven't really had that accountability within our government for what happened in 9/11, so that's part of the process. But certainly commission members those giving testimonies, Richard Clark said today, are going to do so with the idea of figuring out how to stop the next attack, which, as George Tenet warned repeatedly yesterday, earlier today, is coming. We just don't know where.
Steve Call, I'm wondering, any indications from this hearings so far, from the testimony of these former and current administration officials, that they're better prepared to deal with this sort of thing, that or are they just sort of waiting for, as you know, this next attack to happen?
Well, they think that they've solved a number of the problems of administration in the intelligence community that were highlighted by some of the failures before September 11th, particularly the issue of sharing granular threat information between the CIA and the FBI. They've reformed both the law and the administrative model by which the intelligence community reviews threats and interrogation reports, that sort of thing. There's been a lot of testimony about those changes. There's still some big questions hanging over the commission about reform in the intelligence area. And one of those is whether the current structure of the intelligence agencies, which is a very complicated structure born in the Cold War and involves an independent CIA, but a director of central intelligence who's notionally responsible for all of the intelligence in the United States, whether that should be changed. And this is a debate that's been going on in similar form for years and years in Washington. I don't see any sign that the commission is going to change the way intelligence is run in the United States, but it's certainly going to debate it before it's done.
I was struck by the sense of drama that's being played out in this hearing room, where there have been so many other hearings in Washington. And I'm wondering, beyond the perhaps the riveting nature of it to some of us, is this an issue, John? Do you think that people have kind of moved beyond at this point, or is it as interesting as we find it here?
I don't think they've moved beyond it. I mean, I think 9/11 is looming over this political campaign and looming over the country in a way that you cannot underestimate. The Madrid bombing certainly contributed to that as well.
Thanks very much. John Harwood, political editor for The Wall Street Journal. He was here with us in Studio 3A. Steve Call from The Washington Post. Thank you very much. We'll be back in a short break. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.